on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How are you? We're back for another episode of the YokeCast podcast, and we get to gear up for another week of Coyote football. Coyotes into the quarterfinals for the third straight year. Hopefully, they can make a second straight trip to the semifinals of the FCS playoffs. But we'll see what happens. South Dakota went down to Mercer last week, dominated. Now they get the Montana Grizzlies. This is sure to be a great matchup in Missoula on Saturday. We're going to talk about that matchup coming up in the show with Riley Corcoran. He is the play-by-play voice of the Montana Grizzlies. We'll also have a conversation with LJ Phillips, who, of course, is a Coyote running back and has just had a phenomenal season at South Dakota. And the other part coming up is the audio from, you may have seen the video. If you did, it's the same audio of an update that I had the chance to sit down with John Schemmel. We did a video. This was sent out, and we're just putting the audio here as well, just reaching more people. Just an update from the athletic director in John Schemmel. So if you haven't had a chance to watch the video, then keep listening. You'll hear everything that was on that right here on the YoteCast podcast. Exciting times for Coyote Athletics. We're closing in on the Christmas holiday. Finals week going on right now, and what that means is we're going to get less and less here for a little bit of Coyote sports, and then we'll get geared up again in the month of January. But we'll take a look at all that coming up here in just a little bit. Let's start it this week with LJ Phillips. He's been phenomenal since taking over as the top running back for South Dakota, having himself a tremendous season, has a chance to go over 2,000 yards for the season when the Coyotes head to Missoula, Montana this weekend. He's a big part of the offense. He's stuck with the program for, you know, a long time, waiting for his opportunity, and now he's making the most of it. This week, I had a chance to sit down with LJ and talk to him about his career. LJ, what a great season this team has had. I know many people have talked about it, but didn't get off to the best of starts, and here we are, a chance to go back to the quarterfinals of the playoffs, and you've seen this with this team now 3 years in a row. How would you describe this year from, you know, the non-believers stepping away from this team early in the season? I think the only people, honestly, that believed in this team was in the building, and here we are.
I mean, all we got is us. That's all we need. We knew that, you know, we started off kind of slow. We got punched in the mouth. Coach Johansson puts it like in boxing terms, you know. We got knocked down, but we got back up, and we kept swinging, as Coach Trevor would say, too, as well. We just kept swinging, and there's no secret why we're here. We're resilient, and, you know, we all love each other, and we won some tough games, and there's just no secret why we're here.
You've talked before publicly about loyalty and what South Dakota's meant to you coming out of high school with an injury, and you've stuck in this program and didn't really get your opportunity a whole lot until this year. I mean, a few years ago, people remember your game at Western Illinois and a couple of touchdowns, and I was like, man, this dude's been hiding at the bottom of the roster, right? And then you got Travis Tice and Charles Pierre, and I know you didn't want to see the injury to Charles, but it gave you the opportunity to have the reins. What was that moment like, the realization of this is my time, it's time to go?
I mean, it still hasn't hit me. It's weird every day. You know, I think I'm just playing the game, trying to be as free as I can. And having Charles and Key and that whole running back room, Mac, Reed, Carson, and Julius and all them on my corner has really helped me a lot, just having those guys with me and keeping me intact.
You've had a lot of success, obviously, this season, and that hasn't gone unnoticed. A bunch of touchdowns, a bunch of yards, and you've always been the first guy to say, man, that offensive line. Every time somebody asks you about it, you talk about that offensive line. It's been an interesting offensive line. Some of those guys brand new this year. Some of those guys got injured. New guys have stepped in. How has that group kept it together?
That offensive line is tough and strong. They're just built different. You know, to be an offensive lineman, you got to have that dog in you. I think all of them do, and you know, a lot of them, some of them got hurt, and then you got freshmen coming in, stepping up, and then just doing their thing. And then, I mean, it's such an unselfish position to be an offensive lineman, so that's why I try to give them all their credit, because I've seen, you know, I had a block for Trav, and you know, it's not the most sexy thing to do. You don't get a lot of credit for it, so I try to always highlight the little things that they do and them blocking, they just make me look good. And it's forever will always be because of them why I look so good.
Some of those great runs that you've had, you look to be maybe an outside run and you're always looking for the cutback lane. What is going through your mind when you line up and go through a play? What are you looking for?
I'm just looking for open gaps, looking at pre-snap reads, seeing how they're playing. I don't know. I've always been told, like, all the RBs make fun of me because of it. They're always like, man, you'll get the ball and just cut back immediately. And I'm like, well, dang, I'm just trying. But they always make fun of me. I don't know. It's just a feel thing. I can't really honestly explain it.
The Southern Illinois game was special, a milestone. You did all this stuff, and somebody that kept asking me, like, what has LJ not done? And I said, LJ's not caught a touchdown pass. You finally got that done at Southern Illinois, another career mark. Yeah. I mean, you obviously score any way which possible you can, but did you realize at the time that was your first receiving touchdown?
In the moment, no. Someone told me after the game, I was like, oh, my gosh. I caught it. I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm open. We about to score. And then I was just thinking about Travis Tice because Travis Tice caught one. And like I was like, man, I'm going to do that. And he's like, man, you ain't going to get no catching career. You ain't going to score no touchdown through the air. And so I was like, I got you. And then it finally happened. So that's immediately what I thought.
Finally happened. Yeah. You got one of those, a bunch of rushing touchdowns. This offense has been so balanced. I mean, obviously, you've ran the ball well. Carson and Reed have ran the ball well. Aiden is setting records passing, Lorenzo's setting records receiving, things like that. What makes this offense so dynamic?
I think we just got a lot of playmakers. I think we all embrace the role and we all want to see each other succeed. You know, the wide receivers don't get enough credit, but the blocking on the perimeter is insane. You know, a lot of those runs that we have are because of them as well. And then, I mean, I think we have, like, just the best wide receiver core. I think we could throw it up to any one of those guys and they're going to make a play. And it was shown, like, last week.
Yeah. You know, last week you had a big run. You got tracked down from behind.
Oh, really? You going to do that?
We got to finish off some of these runs.
You going to bring that up? I'm going to be honest. I don't think it was as egregious as what people were making it seem. Like, I broke the tackle. He was still right there. He was really fast. I don't think I got hawked. I'm not counting that. Yeah, y'all can't do that to me. I'm not counting that.
All in good fun, obviously. But you look at just this year, and obviously, you know, Southern Illinois, you weren't feeling the greatest. Yeah. You know, been beat up with no bye week, and I know that meant a lot to you guys getting that bye week. Carson Fletcher's really stepped in. We saw Reed get his first touchdown last week in the playoffs. Carson stepped up. He's got 200-yard rushing games. What makes this running back room work?
I mean, I think Coach Warren doing a great job, and then I think we're all just super close. We all want to see each other succeed. So, like, seeing Carson doing his thing and then seeing Reed score his first touchdown, I mean, that was amazing to see Reed get in there. Playoff Reed is what I call him now because he out here just making money in the playoffs. But it's just fun to be with these guys. I love seeing them. We all eat together. We all do things together, and I love this group.
I know that obviously there's a big goal for this team, and it's to keep playing football for a few more weeks and all of that. But you'll get a chance at some point to look back. But what has this season meant to you? Somebody who's just continued to grind out, and you know, maybe people saw your name on a roster but didn't see you able to make a lot of plays because we've had a lot of good running backs here. What has this meant to you just for all of the work that you put into it?
It's meant a lot. I'm not going to lie, you know. I put in a lot of work this year. I think this is like I really honed in and like I just – it was a different type of work that I put in just as far as like going back home, making sure I'm eating right, making sure I'm getting enough sleep, just pushing myself while no one's watching. And, you know, God is good. You know, I'm going to be honest. You know, I knew I would have a breakout would happen, but I didn't know it would come like this. It's just amazing. It's kind of corny and cliche, and a lot of people say, you know, you got to keep preparing even though when it's not your turn. But I can truly say that I was preparing every time. Like, I was a starter. I prepared. I worked at it. I would watch the film. I prepared. And so when the moment came, you know, my dad always say, just prepare and you'll be ready. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I kept doing it. And to see it happen, it's just like, wow, this paid off. All the studying and, you know, maybe not getting a lot of carries or not getting in the game like that, but studying, and it finally paid off, and it's been really amazing. It's been a blessing. It's been a journey, I'll say that.
I know that you talk about always preparing, and you're right. It's cliche. Everybody says it. Always prepare like you're the starter. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
How do you fight through the last few years mentally and stay in it and keep that mindset so that when your number was called, and it has been called this year, that you could be what you've always known you had the capabilities of being?
It was tough. I mean, a lot of conversations with my dad. I think just him telling me to stay in it and keep fighting. I think, you know, it's hard. It's hard as an athlete. You know, you come from high school, you know, you're the main guy, and then you go into college where everyone's really good. You're not the main guy no more. It's kind of humbling in a way, and it can make you lose confidence. So there was sometimes confidence was lost. I was like, well, man, am I really good at football? And I love football, and I want to be good at it. So like, am I really meant for this? Am I built for the moment? And, you know, just God blessing me and just taking it one day at a time. It's just crazy to see what's happening, and I'm hoping to continue to keep going. And, you know, I love the support, but never can't be satisfied, not satisfied. And I love the pats on the back, but I think I got to be my hardest critic at times. And people are like, well, why are you so hard on yourself? And it's just to, you know, got to keep yourself humble, and I want more. And that may sound kind of greedy, but you always got to want more.
You got to want more, and the more that you want, the more it helps this team and the journey continue. You know, we're in an era of college athletics where sometimes you guys don't get their opportunity right away and they go look for a new opportunity. Why was it important for you to stay right here, keep building on what you're doing? I mean, maybe you could have gone somewhere else and gotten that opportunity. That opportunity came this year.
Yeah.
You got kids wanting your autograph and everything now. Yeah. And I'm sure that's pretty cool for you. But why stay and keep fighting the way you have right here?
Honestly, my dad always just kept me in it. I think just having the conversations we had and him telling me to keep fighting, and it really just it stapled in my brain. And I mean, I love the support. You know, I never thought, honestly, in a million years I'd have kids walking up asking for autographs. I think that's my favorite part, is when a kid asks for a picture or an autograph, and I love that. And then interacting with the great fans we have, just hearing the love and support that they have for the Coyotes, and then wishing me the best and wishing our team the best. I think that's the most special thing. That's what I love about college football, is just the fans and then the interactions and having people cheer you on and taking time out of their day to come support us and watch us play.
I feel like, you know, I've seen you a lot of places, whether it's practice, on the plane, wherever. Man, you always got a smile on your face. You seem to be a really positive person. You could be not feeling good after a football game. You find a way to get that smile. Why is it so important to you to keep being positive the way that you are?
I'm going to be real. I don't know. A lot of people say that. I don't know. I just try to smile and make someone else's day better. You know, even if my day is not going as great, I try to make everyone else's day better. And, you know, putting a smile on people's face, you know, it's very important. I don't know what their day is like, so if I can make their day good, then I'm happy by me. That's fine by me.
I know you said you're never satisfied, and you always knew that you had the ability to be a really good running back. Did you ever imagine we'd be sitting here at a point where you've got the most rushing yards in the country at the FCS level? You've climbed up some charts the way that you have, records at USD and stuff. Like, is that surreal? I know you're not satisfied, and I know the records aren't the goal, but it's got to be refreshing to see and understand the impact you make.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. It's just like you know, during the year, you're so focused on trying to win games. That's all you think about is win, win, win. And it will probably hit me, you know, eventually, you know, seeing what I've done. But, like, even the stuff that you named off, I'm going to be honest, I don't realize what I'm doing. And I think that's a good thing, you know, not getting lost in numbers. But I'll look back on it, and, you know, a lot of people are like, man, you're doing a great job. I'm just like, it's part of the job. You got to do better. But, like, it's crazy to hear all those, and I'm sure after, you know, whenever there's a time, I'll look back and be like, man, you know, I did a good job, but, you know, no time for pat myself on the back.
When you're in a game, do you realize when you're having, like, a game with big yards, high volume, things like that, do you understand that, or is it just every play, and then you realize after the game, like, wow, we put up some numbers.
It's that one. Every play, I'm like, this was a good day in the office today. You know, during the game, you know, you're just focused on trying to be consistent. I think that's the main thing I've always wanted to be, is try to be consistent. And so you can't focus on that. So, like, after the game, I'm like, oh, it was a pretty good day.
What's more fun, the breakaway run where you're going for the big touchdown, or running somebody over?
I'm going to have to say the breakaway run, because everybody wants to hit on my speed. And, you know, because Keandre, you know, that's lightning in the bottle. He'd be like, he said I look kind of fast. So I was like, if Key's saying I look fast, then I'm really fast. I'm going to have to go breakaway.
I know we talked about kids coming up and getting your autograph, things like that. What has made this place so special to you?
The people are really nice, and the people love football. You know, the support and just the love after the games, even after some tough losses we had, just the fans coming up and being like, hey, you know, you had a good game, tough loss or whatever. But, you know, there were some fans that, you know, kind of thought we were going to get brushed away. But to all the real Coyote fans, you know, appreciate you, and that's major love, and I'm glad that we're having the success we're having.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many games are left in the season, but just know that you've made a great impact to not only the offense but to the fan base as well, and just keep after it, keep doing your thing. Appreciate the time very much. Good luck this week.
Thank you for having me.
That is LJ Phillips, a phenomenal running back at the University of South Dakota, took over as running back number one in game number three of the season after the injury to Charles Pierre Jr. You can tell that LJ, like, he's the guy that doesn't want to see the injury happen to Charles, but knows that this is his time, and now he can step up and do some special things. So hopefully he'll continue to do that. What a season it's been for LJ Phillips. Coyotes head to Missoula, Montana this weekend to take on the Montana Grizzlies. Montana, one of the great programs in the FCS. Only won one national championship or a couple of national championships, but they have been very successful. They win a lot of games. They're always in the playoffs, and it'll be a great setting for college football on Saturday. This week, I had a chance to catch up with their play-by-play voice, Riley Corcoran, and talk about the Grizz. Riley, we're on to the quarterfinal round of the FCS playoffs. The Grizzlies coming off of that win over South Dakota State really dominated the second half of that game. You look at the Montana season, obviously only one loss, and that was against Montana State in a very, very close football game, losing by three. How would you describe this season? There's been some close games. There's been some high-scoring games. How would you describe what the year's been for the Grizz?
Oh, John, it's been a blast, first off, because this team came into the season with a lot of question marks. And although the expectation for Montana football is to be at the upper echelon of the Big Sky in the FCS, when you have to replace every single starter on defense, and last year Montana had a lot of quarterback issues, and a big question going into the year, for good reason, was Kalei Iyot going to make the next step? Of course, you had Eli Gilman, Michael Wortham, everyone maybe knew in the wings that he could be a playmaker, but there were more questions than I think answers going in. And Coach Houck was very candid throughout the course of fall camp how much he loved this team and the makeup of this roster. And we're not sure in this day and age how a roster is going to come together, but Montana has 27 seniors. Only 9 of them have been at the school their entire careers, meaning there's a lot of guys that are in here on their last chance with a chip on their shoulder, with something to prove, that maybe had the individual accolades but didn't have the winning on their resume. And because of that, this locker room really united early. And Coach Houck wasn't sure in September if this team could win big games against North Dakota, Idaho to start Big Sky Conference play when they were still ranked in the top 10. And they just continued to get better. And I think that this season's been so fun because the expectations, we weren't quite sure that this was going to be a no doubt team that could compete for the national championship. And then as the wins started to rack up and they started to build a little bit more magic inside Washington Grizzly Stadium, coming away with a couple of close wins against North Dakota, Eastern Washington, you started to believe. And I think everybody continued to see that this team was really built around their offensive playmakers, and that obviously provides a fun brand of football. And it's all just added up to a great season, and this team has continued to get better. They did have that setback against Montana State, but you know, we can look at it now, and it could be a blessing in disguise, and we'll see if it can spark a playoff run. They certainly look good last week.
Well, you look at that quarterback, Iyot. What has he done to improve and put himself in this spot? Obviously, he's a guy that if he needs to, he can get out and run. But if you look at his numbers, he loves to stand in there and throw the football, and he's done it at a very, very good rate.
Yeah, John, and I think that's probably the biggest difference, is that he has that pocket presence this year. Last year, when he was splitting time with Logan Fife, he was maybe known as more of a runner, and he thought maybe that he had to make more plays with his feet to prove that he was the man at quarterback, and that kind of went back and forth, and he was dinged up with injury because of it. He has really improved his pocket presence. He feels pressure better than anyone I've seen, especially as just a redshirt sophomore, and the connection that he has with his receivers downfield. Montana kind of had a really hard time throwing the ball downfield last year. And this year, it's all about the explosive play and taking shots and being creative in the passing game as well as the run game. And it's just been a great blend. But Kalei'iai'iot, the legacy quarterback, his dad was a Hall of Famer here back in the mid-90s when the Grizz were really flying around on offense. So to see this story really come full circle for Grizz fans, it's been so much fun to follow. But just as a redshirt sophomore, the future is incredibly bright. He just got over 3,500 yards in a single season, a career high last week against South Dakota State. But really, John, the number to look at is his completion percentage. He's on point to on pace right now to break the school record for about a 70% completion percentage, and that's above names like Dave Dickinson, which are in a complete lore here at Montana. So he's just been incredibly efficient last week with 29 completions against a pretty good Jackrabbit defense.
You mentioned the explosive plays. Well, that's been a little bit susceptible to the Grizz defense at times. We saw a couple of them last week for South Dakota State, but you talked about it. This defense lost a lot of players from a year ago. What have you seen out of their progression throughout the course of the season and as they continue to try to help lead this team?
Yeah, John, I think it's the adage of bend but don't break. That's what this defense is, because if you look at maybe the yards at times and you fall in love with the stats and the numbers, it's not pretty. And you say, okay, you can look maybe more at the deficiencies, but when it comes down to it, this red zone defense is really good. And they still were the second best scoring defense in the Big Sky Conference. So when it really comes down to it, this team's able to make plays. And I think that the evolution of this defense, you have to go back to maybe the end of September when their best defender, arguably Keon Loud, the star corner for Montana, was injured against Idaho. And because of that, their pass defense was really susceptible to the big play, and everybody was taking advantage of that as Montana was figuring out the rotation. A couple of journeyman seniors that were playing at corner but didn't have much experience, and then they started to blend in a couple of true freshmen that have never played before. So there was a lot of trial and error, I would say, during the middle half of the season for Montana, trying to get over that loss of Keon Loud, and then they did. They were solidifying the secondary a bit, and the guys up front really have come together. The first six games of the season, Montana's defense had only 6 sacks. The last 7 games, they've had 24 sacks. So they've been able to get in the backfield with more regularity. And now Keon Loud, he returned last week against South Dakota State. And this defense looked incredibly different. Yes, the big play has been a bugaboo this season for Montana, but they feel a little bit more solidified. And what a great matchup we have here this week. And if it transpires that they're on the same side of the field most of the time, but you've got the stud wide receiver that you guys obviously have in Fenner, and then going up against Keon Loud, really looking forward to that matchup on Saturday.
Yeah, can't wait to see that. What has the season been like as far as in the locker room? You know, the national conversation for Montana a lot of the year has been like, well, Montana really hasn't been tested. They haven't played anybody. Meanwhile, the Grizz just keep winning game after game after game. And then, of course, the close loss to Montana State. Inside the building, I know a lot of times people say we don't pay attention to the outside noise. I mean, you hear it, right? You're on social media, you're as student athletes, you hear it. What has been the consistent message for Coach Houck as they've just handled their business and gone their own way here?
They take that week-by-week approach so much, and to the point where even guys like me around the program every day, you go, okay, do you guys really buy this? And they do, John, and it's admirable that they have been able to keep things within the locker room walls. And it, absolutely, they're able to hear it, and they use it as fuel. And I think that the biggest example of that was what happened in the last 2 weeks after losing to Montana State, and maybe the people that came out and said, see, this is the team we thought, that they weren't legit, they weren't able to beat Montana State. Game, they use that as fuel. And I think that the conversation leading into last week's game was more about South Dakota State from the outside. Oh boy, the Jackrabbits are back. Chase Mason returns. Watch out, the Jackrabbits are the team that's going to come in here, get the victory, and pave all the way through. I've never seen the team more motivated, and they had their best week of practice. And it's worth noting, too, in the story of this Grizzly season, They were the only FCS team in the country that played 12 consecutive weeks. Their bye week was actually at the beginning, and their first game was a night game on September 6th. There were teams, in fact, South Dakota, one of those squads that was playing in games against Iowa State already had three games in before Montana had even kicked off their first game. So for them last week or over the Thanksgiving holiday to get that bye week, they looked rested. They looked refreshed. And this is a team, again, we mentioned the seniors and all of the experience on there. They've had a chip on their shoulder because they want to win. And that's been a really fun aspect to watch this team play throughout the course of the season.
The only thing I'm going to correct there is South Dakota also played 12 consecutive weeks and got their bye week at the end of the season. And now going into the playoffs, you know, I think that was important for South Dakota. They played 12 straight weeks, had the bye week at the end of the regular season, and then, of course, had to play in the first round of the playoffs. So two teams that have followed a very, very interesting and similar path, it feels like.
Absolutely, and that's a good point. Okay, so we need to get it changed in our game notes. That's right. We both played 12 straight weeks. I forget you guys had that weird bye in the final week of the regular season. So there we go. Both teams with more parallels as we talk about this, John, because I think that both of these squads have great similarities in having people doubt them. And we had fun talking about this in our lead up to our conversation today, just about how South Dakota's was maybe early when everybody was jumping off the ship. And it was bizarre that, you know, here at Missoula, that everybody was kind of wondering, is this team still legit, as they went 11-0? And there's only been four teams in program history here that have gotten out to that 11-0 start. So at the same time, I love the similarities, and it's only fitting that we have this matchup, and we're biased, but we certainly think this is the best matchup of the quarterfinal round.
It's certainly going to be a fun one. You've been around, obviously, Montana for a long time. For somebody who's never been, how would you describe playoff Washington Grizzly Stadium?
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps by you even saying playoffs in Washington Grizzly Stadium. It's what we live for, obviously, in Missoula. And to have that place come to life in the playoffs, you just see a different kind of intensity, a different kind of atmosphere, to where always the fans are engaged, but they're hanging on their seats every single play. And the anticipation of even the teams running out of the tunnel, you can just feel the crowd as the tense moments lead up to game time. And it's just a three-hour movie. It really is. And it's going to be an intense crowd, South Dakota State. And again, this got caught in the headlines a bit, but SDSU said, we're not going to have any issues with the noise. There's no problem about the noise. Well, they had four false starts in the game. That was a season high at Washington Grizzly Stadium. In the last 2.5 seasons, there's been over 50 false starts committed by the opponent. So the noise is certainly going to be a factor. Montana lives for these home playoff games. They've won 10 consecutive home playoff games. They've won 17 of their last 18. The last loss came 12 years ago. So they've got an extra layer of confidence as well. And the weather looks like, at least right now, as we're 2 days away, John, it's going to be okay, but still a little bit brisk, a little bit cold, and we'll see if that plays a factor here on Saturday.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Riley, appreciate your time very much. Look forward to the game on Saturday.
Sounds great, John. Safe travels out here.
That is Riley Corcoran. He is the play-by-play voice of the Montana Grizzlies. Appreciate his time and the conversation about the Grizz. It'll be a fun one at Washington Grizzly Stadium on Saturday afternoon. Hopefully you can tune in and listen. It's on ABC, and if you can make the trip, I would recommend you do that as well. This week, got a chance to sit down with John Schimmel, the athletic director at South Dakota. We did a conversation and talk about everything from high school football parking to playoff ticket prices to NCAA updates, all that stuff. This is the same audio that was in the video, so if you watch that, then this will be a repeat for you. If you did not see the video that came out this week, then this is that conversation with John Schimmel. Hey, Coyote fans, welcome into a conversation with the AD, John Schimmel. Updates as we get through seasons at USD and see changes all over that affect the University of South Dakota and Coyote Athletics. Always good to get a conversation with the AD and an update. John, I know there's a lot of things going on right now. Obviously, athletically, with seasons starting up and seasons we're hoping don't finish anytime soon, but so many things going on right now. How do you keep all this straight?
Yeah, a lot of great staff, really. You trust a lot of people to do their jobs, but November, December is always the craziest time of year. All your fall sports are still going into November. You got your basketballs kicking off. Now you got swimming indoor track season kicking off. So a lot of things going, but it brings a lot of energy and excitement, and that's part of what we love doing.
There's always going to be conversations about things that involve Coyote athletics and maybe just the university in general. One of those hot topics recently was the high school football championships, which of course have been hosted at USD for a number of years, minus the year that we were doing renovations, mm-hmm. things like that. Hot topic this year was USD decided it was going to charge for parking in the main lots, and not every lot, but some of the premium parking lots. What goes into that decision? I know when all that started to come out, it kind of felt like negative light was being shined on it. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the decision process there?
Yeah, I mean, really, the process started about this time a year ago. Looking at, I mean, one, we're in a 15-year agreement, which is a long agreement, and there's no change in that financially or otherwise. And so really, I started looking at what are the opportunities to add some things or change some things in that would make it more financially stable for us. In doing so, in the couple years that we have left on the remaining agreement, we love hosting high school football. We have every intent of continuing that and hoping we can do that too. But really, you know, it just came down to what the options were per the contract, and parking was that. And so looking at parking, but also it was consistent with what South Dakota State did the year they hosted it. So I talked to Justin Sell about what they did, how they did it. I talked to my brother, did the contract at Northern Iowa when he was the deputy AD there. They host high school football there. So talked to him, and he's at Tulane now, but talked to their staff that's there. Our contract is certainly a little bit outdated and really puts us in a position. We're not trying to get rich off this event, but we're certainly not trying to lose money, right? And I think financially, when you look at just our hard costs, what the contract was, but then I think things that we've gotten accustomed to the last couple of years is we're adding in our staff time and all of these things. We shut our ticket office down for 3 days. So not only are they selling for state high school football, but they're not selling for us. There's a cost to that. And so how do we attribute all those things into what we're doing? But then also we want to provide a good experience to everyone that comes here. And there's a cost to that, right? And so we need to make sure, you know, when those expenses are coming out of our pockets, that we have revenues coming in to help support those. And this was the opportunity to do that. And certainly as we get into the next iteration of the contract, we're not looking to price anybody out, do anything like that with the State High School League. But there'll be other things that we can look at that are a little bit more convenient than a cash paid, you know, parking ticket option. But per the contract and per discussions with the State High School League, that was really our only option to go with this year. And we'll see if that holds true for next year or not. But, you know, just like filling up your car is much more expensive. You know, really the last time we looked at what our expenses were, carrying this event was 5-7 years ago. And when we re-ran those numbers, it's a very different number today. And so we wanted to make this correction just to make it a little bit more viable for us.
Well, I hope people really understand how taxing and how much work goes into it from your staff. There's a lot of people from USD that are involved in making this a possibility and making the championships what they are.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I already mentioned, our ticket staff, but it's our facilities crew, our game day staff, event staff. You know, well over 50% of our department, non-coaches obviously are working that, but I mean, shoot, we even have coaches jumping in and helping out where they can. So not only are we working it, but really, you know, covering a lot of the hard expenses that go on. I mean, we're paying for security, like the way the contract's written, all of the expenses come back a lot, not all of them. A lot of the expenses come back to us for game day crews. Even the guys holding the first down markers, everything like that. So it's not just, hey, you know, here's a $50,000 thing and we're free and clear and we're putting that in our pocket. That's far from the truth. And then I think too, just one of the reasons that we would host an outside event is to make money, right? I mean, we have to acknowledge that there's what we do is much, much more expensive than it was certainly, even a year ago, let alone 3, 5, 10. I mean, our entire industry has changed. Every little bit, you know, helps to that. And so when we bring in outside events, we're going to look to at least put a little bit of money away, for hosting that to help you know, provide the experience that we do to our 430 student athletes. And at the end of the day, that is my charge, right? That is, I serve those 430 student athletes, as does 100 people on our staff. And so we all have a responsibility to them, first and foremost, above all, kind of hard stop right there.
Well, we do love hosting the high school football championship, so I know you'll continue to have those conversations. The championship games are the culmination of the playoffs. Speaking of playoffs, FCS playoffs, South Dakota in it again, got a chance to host a game, had maybe an outside chance of hosting one more, but the reality is back to the quarterfinals for the third straight year. We're starting to get used to this. This is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun, and I think, just like you said, we're starting to get used to this. I think this is a good opportunity to say this for the first time, but you know, we've always heard, and John, you've been around here a long time. Jaron has been here a long time. You know, we've heard for a long time, you know, we'll get excited when we get good again. You know, we hear about the good old days and things like that. This is the first time ever in USD football, Division I or Division II, we've won double-digit games in 3 years in a row. This is the first time ever we've gone to any playoffs of any level 3 years in a row. So the good old days and the glory days are right now. They've never been better than they are right now. And so this is the time for people to start jumping on. And I think, obviously, we didn't have good fortune with the weather. And I know that kept a lot of people from coming and even a lot of people being hesitant to buy tickets. But when we host a postseason game, right, I mean, filling this dome is a big deal. And I think people need to understand how the pricing works. We, you know, the NCAA takes a lot of our revenue because they're pooling the money for the tournament to pay for the charters, for travel. So we're putting very little of that money in our pocket. We have not a huge amount of control on the ticket price. Again, we want to make a little bit of money when we're hosting, but we certainly don't make, if we're selling it out, we're not just putting all that money back into USD Athletics. A lot of that money, the large majority of it, goes back to the NCAA to run the tournament and serve the teams traveling and things like that. But we need, that's kind of the next step for us, is for our fan base to start showing up. And it's not just the financial aspect, it's the impact you guys have on the game. The South Dakota State game was unbelievable. I was expecting many, many more SDSU fans than there were. It was a very much a red-dominated facility. And they helped us win that game. In North Dakota State last year, the fans helped us win that game. When we lost to Montana State last year, I mean, that was an unbelievable environment. Their fans helped win that game. Home field advantage is real, but not when there's 3,000 people in the building, right? And you can hear quarterbacks saying hut and clapping, and, you know, we need to fill this building. And I think that's the next step for us as a program, as a fan base. And I think as we look ahead to, obviously we can't host anymore this year, but as we look ahead to next year, certainly the call out there, because it's, again, it's not just the financial aspect, but the impact you all have on the games when we're bringing recruits in, we're bringing recruits into every game when they see that, whether it's football, basketball, anything, you might get a commitment out of an environment like that. I know we got a lot of commitments that SDSU weekend. Yep. We had a lot of recruits here. And they saw that crowd and heard what it sounds like in here. Even though we don't have a 20,000 seat stadium, it's louder than most 20,000 seat stadiums when we have 9,000-10,000 people in here. So you fans make such a huge difference in everything that we do. And as I keep saying, it's just kind of the next step for us. But the time is now, right? This is as good as it's ever been. And we're committed to continuing this growth. And then I'll end that part just by saying, you know, these things, the financial aspect of football games, basketball games, volleyball games, those are the things that help lift up not only those sports, but those help us lift up tennis and softball and soccer. And I tell people all the time, there are two ways to support the tennis program: buy football, basketball, volleyball season tickets and donate directly to tennis. Those are really the only things you can do to lift up the tennis program. And so whether you're in it for football or basketball or volleyball directly, or you have a passion somewhere else, you know, showing up and buying tickets matter, and they matter huge.
I want to touch on, you mentioned the ticket prices, you know, the NCAA, you said they kind of help determine that, or there's not a lot of wiggle room. I think what our fans see sometimes is they see other places who are selling them maybe for $20 less or maybe different. Is it based on facility size? Is it based on a percentage the NCAA gets?
how do you price yourself in a way that it looks the same? You know, it's the eye test, I guess, is what it is. When our fans see, okay, we're charging this much, this school's charging this much, how do we get to that? Would that encourage more fans to come? It's kind of, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg type of thing. But sure. How does that get determined when, you know, that's the optics, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, we have kind of a premium game set price, and we would view the postseason along with that. And I don't know how other schools, if other schools are in a position to host and just lose money, or because I guarantee you hosting has a minimum requirement. We have to put in minimum bids. We're not too excited about hosting and then taking a $50,000 bath to host. And so if other schools are in a position to do that, great. I mean, we still let our students in for free, but we have campus support to do that. Those tickets are paid for. You know, for us, we just view it alongside a Dakota Days experience. It's a postseason experience, a SDSU rivalry experience. And it's consistent really with what we see. I think when, you know, the schools I pay attention to the most are the other three Dakota schools, the other two Montana schools, and trying to align with those. Just I think those are holistically as institutions, not just football programs. I think those are the universities we align with the most. And so we all tend to look at each other quite a bit and copy and steal from each other with good ideas and I guess maybe some bad ideas, but nonetheless, we're all kind of not too far from each other, and that's pretty intentional.
You mentioned the minimum bid and things like that. Now, we're away from the idea of in round one, it's a war on who can bid the most, but even though you're a top seed or whatever and you get a host, every round it costs more and more money to host. I think that's important for people to understand that even though the bid process in round one is gone, it still costs you money to host if your facility is available.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And there are people that in universities that have passed on opportunities to host for the financial reasons, regardless even of other circumstances. You know, one example is more of a scheduling thing, but even if Illinois State was the number 9 seed this year and they would have been hosting a game, 9 seed, and they would have been hosting a game in the first round, they wouldn't have been able to host. And that was more because of a scheduling conflict, but the same thing can be true for financial reasons, right? So there's minimum bids and requirements for us to do. And as I mentioned before, it all pools back together into help the NCAA to pay for the charter for us to go to Montana here this weekend.
Well, I'm confident if South Dakota is in position to host games, you'll do everything you can to host that game and have it right here in the dome.
Very much committed to that. Yes, very much committed to that.
You know, we're always on the lookout for changes, and they could be changes that affect us right here, maybe across the league. And one of the big ones, obviously, recently is Denver's announced that they're going to move on to a new conference. And I think right away the panic was, is the Summit League in trouble? What do we do next? Do we need to get to a league where we have all of our sports under one instead of be under two different conferences? What kind of impact does Denver leaving have on us right now?
Yeah, I mean, listen, everyone's initial response is, oh no. And, you know, obviously 8 is a tedious number and a little bit scary when you look at it. There's actually a lot of advantages to 8. One, we all split more revenue. We get a greater share. Most of our revenues don't drop overly significantly. So that's not, you know, our Summit League basketball tournament's going to make just as much money. Now we're splitting it 8 ways instead of 9. So there's a lot of good in that. You know, I think it just comes down to the commitment from the 8 schools that you have. And obviously for us and for me, and I think our fans, and I've said this a bunch, you know, our alignment really starts and ends with the 3 Dakota schools, right? As long as we're playing competition against the other 3 Dakota schools, we are exactly where we need to be. And then I feel great about, in fact, we had a call this morning with the other Summit League ADs, with ORU and UMKC and Omaha and St. Thomas. You know, I think we're all committed to where we are. I think we all understand the environment we're in college athletics, and it's kind of the constant change that we have. But setting football aside, and all the schools, with the exception of UMKC and ORU, have some combination of another revenue-generating sport, being football or hockey or both, even in some cases. And so we're all we all kind of get used to we're not in the all-sport conference. Some have a football and a hockey conference. Obviously, all the Valley schools have the Missouri Valley Football Conference, which is still the strongest conference, you know, in the country. I don't think anyone's maybe the Big Sky is trying to argue their way into that. I think it's just something we continue to work through. But I think there's a lot more advantages in the short term. The revenue, we already talked about, it makes us pretty lean. But as long as there's commitment from those eight schools, and there is commitment from those eight schools, I actually feel great about it. And I think the worst thing we can do is just start chasing membership, pulling in people here that really don't align with what we're doing. And geography will always be our biggest challenge, right? You pull up our conference now, and it is literally a line down I-29 from North Dakota to Oklahoma, and then you have someone 3 hours east of that in Minnesota. So it actually, geography works about as well as it could for any of us, and you start looking at other schools and other conferences, you know, the challenges are pretty obvious there. We're a bordering state with Montana, but, you know, it's not anywhere close to get to either of the Montana schools. And certainly you add Idaho's and other Big Sky teams. It's just the geography, the mountains spread us out quite a bit west. And then east, obviously, you got the Valley and other schools. But the Valley still sees themselves as a step above us and everything but football, obviously, which I don't agree with, but that's their perception, certainly in basketball. And then Horizon has a good league that fits for them. And so, you know, there's just real no obvious answer. And then even if there is an obvious answer, they have to want to move, right? And nobody, you know, for the most part, none of the schools that people would say, well, that's an obvious one, they're probably not interested, right? They're where they want to be. So there's a lot that goes into it, as far as the eight goes and Denver leaving, other than just being at the number eight, I actually think it's a great thing, I think as the waters have calmed a little bit on that, I think all eight institutions feel the same way.
I think some people get concerned about some of the other sports like baseball. We get very limited with losing. Obviously, Denver didn't have baseball, but you start to get some of these that you worry about. Then there's always the conversations. I never know if they're just media conversations or not, but should this school go FBS? Should this school go FBS? Do you get concerned with that much? Right now we're enjoying what we're doing, and we're trying to put ourselves best foot forward at the FCS. How much is that on your mind? How much do you worry about some of that?
Yeah, I think, again, for me, the sanity has come from falling back to the same thing I said earlier, right? If we're Division I or Division IX, I don't really care as long as we're playing the other three Dakota schools. We're where we should be. Those things are always out there. I think our commitment and my commitment is, and I know President Gestring's commitment, is we want to compete at the second level of football, whatever that is. Right now that's FCS, and it seems like the foreseeable future that's FCS. And so we're going to compete for championships, and we still got work to do to build up, the programmatic and consistent success and branding, certainly that North Dakota State has, and even, you know, credit to that school in Brookings that has too. The other Montana schools, they've all won championships in Montana SDSU's case, more than one. We still have things to aspire to there. I think the level of competition at the top, you get to the top 20, 25 FCS programs in the country, I think is great. I think you even really get down into the top 10, 15 programs. I think the competition level between those schools and much of G6 is razor thin, and I don't think any of us would be intimidated to go take the field with any of those schools at any point. So to me, it's less so much about FBS, even though that's the term that carries it. It's more what's going to happen at the very top. Are they going to separate? If they separate and then there becomes kind of a singular national championship with 50, 60, 70 schools, and then there's another second level championship, that's where we're going to want to be, and that's what we're committed to. But right now, that's right where we are.
Well, we're always looking out for the future, and I know you got to enjoy where you're at right now and continue to be good at the spot you're at. How about, you know, you start looking at NCAA stuff, okay, and there's been a lot of changes. There have been talks about expansion of the men's basketball tournament. There's been changes with the portal windows for football, all of that stuff. I mean, what's the latest, if there's the latest, on the NCAA and things that people maybe need to kind of have an eye out for, ear out for things coming down the line?
Yeah, I think it's kind of just the old saying, get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, it's, and we've talked about this a lot with our staff and our team and our coaches. If you can't get comfortable being uncomfortable, this probably isn't the right industry for you at the moment. And I don't see that ending in the next 3 to 5 years. I think we have another 3 to 5 years of good chaos in front of us. And I think confusion, some unknowns. But you know, for me, it's just trying to find the things that really matter to USD, in all of that, and focus on that. If the tournament expands, and I think it will, you know, hopefully there's some semblance of holding on to, not just pushing all the smaller schools out, you know, in the earlier rounds and having us all knock each other off before we get into the 68 or 64. But you never know. I mean, those decisions really just aren't in our control. I think whether you're looking at the NCAA or the CSC now, and the CSC is kind of the new governing body on most of the revenue generating external stuff. I mean, those decisions really don't even come to us. They're decided on and voted on in the autonomy conferences, and or they have enough of the majority to swing it one way or the other. By the time it comes to us, it's already decided. We're not being asked to sign something like it's a question. It's sign this or you're not part of it, right? And so, I mean, in a weird way, there's some sanity in that, I guess, because you're just along for the ride. We're advocating for as much as we can along the way. Certainly, Commissioner Fenton and Commissioner Jackson with the Valley, too, they do what they can to make sure our voice is heard and we have a presence in there. But really, this is controlled by money, and it's controlled by four conferences, and I would say more, it's really controlled by two. It's the Big Ten and the SEC that are driving all this. The ACC and the Big 12 are along for the ride, not quite as much as we are, but certainly a little bit as well. And I think we all know that. And I think at our level right now and where we're at, again, there's a lot of frustration with that, but in a weird way, there's a little bit of sanity in that too.
I know there was a big deal that we talked about, you know, a few months ago about the House settlement and opting in and all that stuff. How's just that kind of played out here, you know, as you kind of get into that first year of understanding everything and what we need to do?
It's actually been great for us. So the settlement, you know, we opted in, I think sometime in May or early June last year. And so that allowed us to shut down our third-party collective. And really now we have institutional NIL, which is direct contracts with the institution and the student athletes. And now donor support can run through the foundation. You know, donors can't give directly to pay a student athlete, but they can donate to help generate more funding so we can use our revenues to help support institutional NIL and then use their money to replace that money. So it's still kind of goofy. You know, you, donor A, can't literally write us a $10,000 check and say give to student athlete B, but we could give a student athlete X amount of money. It would have to be money we generate outside of fundraising, and then use the fundraised dollars to replace that. So that's really how it's working. And as complicated as that sounds, the transition of it and the transaction of it with the student athlete is much easier now. And that's gone really, really well. So it's been a really good thing for us. And you know, winning certainly helps drive more ticket sales, more donations, and we've certainly seen that over the last almost 2 years now that I've been here. Our revenues are way up, and that's a huge credit not only to winning but to Corey and Jaron and Ben and their teams. You know, we have really good people leading our external departments now, and you know, I feel great about that, and certainly our fans, they're showing up more. You know, we want to sell out every game all the time, right? But I think when we get lost in the frustration of, well, we had a poor attendance at Illinois State and we had a poor playoff attendance, and obviously a blizzard added to that a little bit, you kind of lose sight of what's really going on. I mean, we're making small strides and small steps, And you look at the growth of other schools in their progression to success, football, basketball, volleyball, whatever it is, you know, we're right on track, and we're kind of mirroring those incremental steps. And so we're getting there. It's just part of it. And winning is the key, and it's winning every year, right? It's setting that expectation. It's knowing we're going to play football in November and December. Leanne has done – I mean, Leanne is a great example of that, right? Our revenues, I think when Leanne started maybe her first year or the first year we started charging tickets for volleyball, I think we grossed $9,000 in ticket sales. Now they're generating well over 50% of what the basketball programs generate in volleyball, and that's because Leanne has set the expectation and built that program up, and we draw really well there. And so that's the responsibility I feel like I and we have to our fans is, you know, if we're throwing out a 500 or worse product, you know, I'm never going to be the athletic director standing in front of them saying, I don't understand why you're not coming when we're finishing sixth and worse, right? I get it. I'm a Bears fan, right? I haven't gone to a game in a long time because I'm a Bears fan, and we haven't had a whole lot to be excited about. So I'm a fan too, right? And I try to see it through that lens. I think where we want to see it is, you know, volleyball is a program and a dominant one. We're all shocked when they lose, right? And that's a great spot to be in. Women's basketball, we certainly feel like Cary has it heading back the direction that we expect to and we're accustomed to here. I love, you know, candidly, our men's basketball program. We weren't funded in a way that was ever going to let us be competitive 2 years ago. We were eighth out of nine and by a mile in the Summit League. And so while you might be able to have a good year, you're not going to build a sustainable winner that way. And we still have work to do on the men's basketball program just as far as our investment in it. But we're in the middle of the pack now, and we're trying to get all of our sports really into the top third of the league. And then obviously football, same thing. We were seventh out of 11 in the Valley 2 years ago, and you know, we're fully committed to being in the top three there, and we know we will be there next year. And I think that's the first time with confidence that we can say that. And now we need to stay there, and to stay there, we have to win. And so that's what we're doing and we're committed to, and hopefully people are getting excited about that.
I know you've said it, but it's worth driving home. If, you know, we have fans that say, why can't we have this or why can't we have that? Or, why can't we have these athletes or whatever? Like every single ticket, at least a part of that goes towards help building what we're trying to build as far as winning programs and coaches and everything like that. It's all very, very important. So if you're on the fence, whether or not you should go to a couple of games, come to a couple of games. Yeah. You'd be surprised. You know, it adds up quickly, right? You'd be surprised how a $20 ticket or $30 ticket or whatever can help the big picture.
There's no doubt. And I think people, too, that are really against student-athletes getting paid or making money. I mean, one, you know, I've said this repeatedly, like, I'm all for it. I'm not of the belief that I understand why kids would be coming to college to retire. Totally against that. And I think that's ridiculous. But for them to earn money, I was a student athlete. And I know what I went through as a student athlete. And so I'm all for that. And supporting these kids and helping them live a comfortable life while they're here with us. But to that point, you know, opting in and the rev share opportunities, it's not just the institutional NIL. We can offer far more scholarships than we ever have been able to now because there's no scholarship limits. It's just roster limits. So football, we used to be restricted to 63 total scholarships. Now we can go all the way to 105. But there's a cost to that, and the institution can't give us money for scholarships. That's a South Dakota state policy. So that has to be revenue we generate. So it's not just that we're paying kids. It's that there's more scholarship opportunities there. Men's basketball went from 13 to 15 because of the roster limit. Volleyball volleyball, I guess, they increased now too, and women's basketball was already at 15. But then you get down into the sports, shoot, like, you know, swimming and diving and track and soccer and all of these other things, softball. Their scholarship limit before might have been 7, 9, 11 in there. Now softballs would be 28 because that's their roster limit. Sure. But that costs a lot of money. And so it's actually the ability for us not only to, and really most of our coaches, and I would say on some level all of them, is really we're trying to use institutional NIL for retention. The kids that have come here, proven themselves as a coyote, and we don't want them to leave, that tends to be most of where we're seeing the institutional NIL. Other than that, it gives these coaches a lot more opportunity to recruit a kid with additional scholarship funding, because we're not restricted to 63 now in football, or we're not restricted to 7 or 9 or whatever the number is in softball. And so that's where those things, so there's still a lot of the traditional benefit coming from this that I think gets lost in the mix of all of this. We're just not making kids rich here, and we're not selling that to kids. We're still selling all of the same things. All of our head coaches are still talking about education, come here, compete, develop, and where there are professional opportunities or Olympic opportunities and programs, they're still selling that. It's all the things we've always been selling. And then we just hope to keep kids around that come here and perform that we know are going to be appealing to others. You know, that's really, you know, what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to put a plan together that's, hey, you graduated, now you get to retire. And that's just not what we're trying to do. And I do think it's ridiculous that there are legitimately student athletes that can do that. You know, by the time they're 22 years old, they can, whether or not they graduate, they can probably be in a position to retire. And some of these student athletes, whether or not they ever play in the NFL or the NBA or whatever, they might be able to retire. I mean, it's just nuts. And that's where the NCAA has completely lost control of this. And that's even disappointing for me to see.
Well, I think if you find a model that can get rich quick, I think a lot of us will be searching for another year of eligibility to try to figure out piece of the pie there.
No doubt.
John, great stuff. Really appreciate your time as always. I know there's always hot topics, a lot of discussion, and so we appreciate your conversation, elaboration on some of this, and I know that you've always had at heart the best interest of the student-athletes and the University of South Dakota.
Yep, absolutely. Love doing it, and appreciate the time, John, and as always, go Yokes.
That's a conversation with the athletic director, John Shem. What a great update on many things going on in college athletics in USD and kind of how we are focused going forward. So appreciate that and his time as always. For sure. As we get set to wrap things up, let's take a look at what is going on in Coyote Athletics. Coming up on Saturday, the Coyote men's basketball team is back at home. They'll play Prairie View A&M at 1 o'clock in the Sanford Coyote Sports Center, that part of that MTE that saw the Coyotes also play South Carolina State and go to Missouri, all connected to the same event. Coyote football, the 11 seed in the FCS playoffs, will play the 3 seed Montana on Saturday afternoon in Missoula, 2:30 Central Time kickoff. Again, that's on ABC. It's also on the Coyote Sports Network. Our pregame coverage will get underway at 1:30 Central Time on Saturday afternoon. Looking ahead to next week, Coyote men's basketball back at home against Dakota State on Wednesday night, while the women's basketball team will be at Pepperdine. They're going to Malibu for a couple of games. They'll play Pepperdine next Wednesday. That'll be 8 p.m. Central Time. And then next Thursday, Coyote women take on UT Rio Grande Valley in that tournament in Malibu as well. 6 o'clock start time for the Coyote women against UT Rio Grande Valley next Thursday, the 18th. So that's it. That's the short list. We'll gear things up again coming up, of course, after the new year and all that good stuff will be loaded again. A full slate of Coyote athletics, no doubt about it. That's what's going on. As always, stay up to date at goyotes.com for news, schedule changes, schedule information, ticket information, all of it available at goyotes.com. That's it for us this week. I'm John Thayer. Have yourself a tremendous weekend. As always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.